हरिः
Chapter 8, New Delhi, crying in the wilderness, crying alone in the wilderness. I have got the clue of going back to Godhead just after leaving my present material body, and in order to take along with me all my contemporary men and women of the world, I have started my paper, Back to Godhead, as one of the means to the way. Please don't think of me as something wonderful or a madman when I say I shall go back to Godhead after leaving my present material body. It is quite possible for everyone and all of us. From a letter to India's president, Dr. Rajendra Prasad. When Abhay arrived in Mathura, he sought out Keshav Maharaj, who was now establishing his mat, and presented him with the deity of Lord Chaitanya. At Keshava Maharaj's request, Abhay agreed to stay there and edit the Gaudiya Patrika. Abhay was given a room, and for the first time, aside from brief visits, he lived in a mat with his godbrothers. As a senior experienced devotee, Abhay held classes and instructed the brahmacharis, who were young, uneducated, and even illiterate. In the disciplines of devotional service, and the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita. He had only recently begun his duties when Bhakti Sharanga Goswami, another sannyasi godbrother, asked Bhaktivedanta Prabhu to assist him in New Delhi at his ashram, Gaudiya Sangha. Both Keshav Maharaj and Bhakti Sharanga Maharaj recognized Abhay as an accomplished writer and editor and wanted to work with him. It was accepted amongst Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's disciples that A.C. Bhaktivedanta Prabhu was an expert preacher and writer, whether in English, Hindi, or Bengali. Now Keshav Maharaj wanted Abhay to stay and work on the Gaudiya Patrika, while Bhakti Sharanga Maharaj, who had had to go to Bengal, was requesting him to come to Delhi to produce the harmonist, known in Hindi as Sajjana Toshini. Abhay was agreeable to Bhakti Sharanga Goswami's proposition, and Keshav Maharaj consented on the condition that Abhay also continue to edit the Gaudiya Patrika, at least by mail. As an editor, Abhay was in his element, and he was happy to preach in cooperation with his godbrothers. Although Abhay didn't consider himself an accomplished scholar or author, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had been pleased by his writings and encouraged him to continue. And now these senior sannyasis of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati were turning to him for help. They were practically competing to see who would get the benefit of his services. Perhaps, Abhay thought, this should be his life's work, serving humbly under the direction of his godbrothers. His ejection from Jhansi had been a kind of setback, at least that it had left him temporarily unsure of how Krishna wanted to use him. But now his godbrothers seemed to be answering the question. Living and working in an ashram with brahmacharis and sannyasis, it was a way of life Abhay had once considered too austere. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had remarked, better he live outside your company. But now he would either have to struggle alone with nothing or stay within the shelter of a friendly portion of the Gaudiya Math. Perhaps he could carry out his desires to preach Krishna consciousness within the ashrams of his godbrothers. Since he would soon be the editor of Sajjana Toshini, he began thinking of how to expand it. It was a scholarly Vaishnav journal, but cheaply produced, with a very limited circulation. He envisioned it surpassing India's slick illustrated weekly. It should be more popular than Time or Life magazines of America. And why not? Krishna was no poor man. Abhay thought of how he could start an ambitious subscription program by approaching the many prominent and wealthy men of New Delhi. Then, by Krishna's grace, he would soon be able to print color photos and use high-quality paper for Sajjana Toshini. He would give it his best effort, depending on Krishna. And while soliciting subscribers, he could take his book manuscripts and try to get them published. Dr. Alagappa in South India had wanted to publish his Gita Upanishad. No doubt there were many men like him. Or perhaps Bhakti Sharanga Goswami would be willing to publish Bhakti Abhay's works with friends from the Gaudiya Sangha. Abhay soon received a letter from Bhakti Sharanga Goswami's assistant, carefully instructing him how to travel to Delhi at the least expense. He was to travel by train third class to Delhi, and from there take a tunga. Since tungas at the station charged too much, Abhay would first walk about 100 meters toward the right-hand side of the station, where he would find a cheaper one. Were he to ride alone, he should pay no more than 1 rupee and 12 annas. 12 annas, that would be 75 pice. 1 rupee, 75. That means the rupee was originally divided into 16 annas, like that. So 4 annas was 25 pice, you know. 8 annas would be 50 pice, but 12 annas would be 75 pice. So when we came to India, even though they were using the Naya Paisa, which is rupees divided by 100, still for 25, 50, and 75, they say charana, atana, barawana. They would still use that. I don't think they use it anymore. You still use it? No. And he should try to share the tunga with another passenger. That would be cheaper. Go, keeping the crematorium to your left-hand side, the assistant instructed him. If you look towards the right, then you'll be able to see our red flag and the signboard written in Hindi and English. When you reach there, we will pay for the tunga. At the Gaudiya Sangha, Abhay found a disconcerting state of affairs. In the absence of their guru, Bhakti Sharanga Goswami, the brahmacharis were quarreling and shirking their duties. And as a result, the preaching and donation gathering were being neglected. Cleanliness, deity worship, cooking, and even peace amongst the devotees were below standard. And like most of the mats of his god brothers, the Gaudiya Sangha was poor. Abhay had come to think he would be editing a magazine, but he found himself contending with a group of quarreling neophyte devotees. He learned that the brahmachari responsible for giving public lectures had not done any preaching. The devotees who had previously been holding kirtans in people's homes were now negligent, and the errand boy refused to run because he had lost his bicycle. Then a brahmachari handed Abhay a letter from Bhakti Sharanga Goswami, requesting him to take up the general management of the mat. Yes?
It's an errand boy.
Errand boy. A boy who runs errands. So what's the next question? What's an errand? Okay. An errand means like small little jobs. Like, you know, take this, like if I give you something and said, take this over to the temple and give it to Janani Vasprabhu or, you know, stuff, you know, things like that. That's an errand. You know, you give something to do and you deliver it to someone else. Does that make sense? Yes? So then an errand boy is a boy who runs errands. Right. Or did you imagine errand would be someone riding on a dragon or something, fighting of the other people and stuff? From the letter, inspire everyone to be engaged in service. Otherwise, I do not know how we are going to print the English monthly magazine. Since we don't have much money in the fund, and since the brahmacharis are quite careless. Akinshana Maharaj wrote that he is unable to take the responsibility of the management. It would be very nice if you could keep your eyes on these affairs. And Abai found other obstacles in trying to produce Sajjana Toshini. No typewriter and bad relations with the printer. In a few days, Abai received another letter for Bhakti Sranga Goswami, telling him what articles to print, cautioning him not to change essential elements in the magazine, and reminding him of his special duty. From the letter, I have asked Akinshana Maharaj to hand over the keys of my room to you, so you may use my room only for your office. Or for your office work. As you are there, you should try to maintain peace in the ashram, for giving necessary instructions to one and all. Abai saw that he could do no editorial work until the laxity and petty quarreling in the ashram stopped. But when he tried to help, as Bhakti Sharanga Goswami desired, some of the devotees rebelled and even wrote to their spiritual master complaining. It was against many obstacles that Abai met the publisher's deadline for the August 1955 issue of Sajjana Toshini. Yet, owing to the printer's delay, the magazine did not come out until September. When at last the first copies were delivered, Abai sent several to Bhakti Sharanga Goswami in Calcutta, asking for his response. Abai never heard from his godbrother directly, but received further instructions from Bhakti Sharanga Goswami's secretary, Rama Ananda, who pointed out various mistakes in the issue, without mentioning whether Bhakti Sharanga had been pleased with it. The errors are mostly technical matters of style. Abai had done the contents page in a different way and had not printed Bhakti Sharanga Goswami's name exactly as he had wanted it in all his articles. Regarding Abai's request for a typewriter, Ramananda wrote that if, quote, the matters are distinctly written, there is no necessity of them being given to the printer in typewriting. So he's saying, he write by hand very carefully. Abai wrote to Bhakti Sharanga Goswami, requesting him to return. Return to Delhi and establish a peaceful atmosphere at the Mat. Regarding Sajjana Toshini, Bhakti Sharanga Goswami suggested that the paper for the cover be improved and that the whole magazine be done on nicer paper by an up-to-date press. And Abai agreed, but improvements depended upon money. A letter. The suggestion that the paper may be printed from Calcutta is all right, but my suggestion is that either in Calcutta or in Delhi, we must have our own press with good equipments so that we may be able to broadcast the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in all the important languages, especially in Hindi and in English. Hindi is meant for all India propaganda, while English is meant for worldwide propaganda. Abai further reported that since it was almost impossible to expect a printer to work speedily from handwritten manuscripts, he had already rented a typewriter. He also mentioned his ideas for increasing the number of subscribers. So you see this thing, you know, this pettiness and all that, that's a very common thing, is that if authority is there, then people think that they should work. If authority is not there, then they think actually no one's there to watch them. They forget that, you know, Krishna's in the heart and Krishna's seeing all this stuff. But not seeing that, then all this pettiness comes up. Also you see in the dealings here is because the secretary is working for the spiritual master, so therefore then he thinks he's very special, rather than thinking he's just assisting. So then, you know, his letter, tone of the letters and all that, then, you know, they just are telling him do this, do that, and they're not actually considering, you know, the personal aspect of how you discuss and work with them. Right? Does that make sense? So these are all natural things that neophytes do. Not that they're good, but it's just it happens. So one should be careful to try to avoid such kind of things. Hmm? What do you think? Yes? Okay. And you? Do you think? You're not sure. Do you know what thinking is? You're not sure of that either. I see. Okay. Abhay's son, Vrindavan, came to live with him for a few months at the Gaudiya Sangha. There was no question of Abhay's returning to his family, and Vrindavan simply associated with his father, following the routines of the mat and helping Abhay in his duties. One day, a prominent advocate, the president of the Hindu Mahasabha, paid an unexpected visit to the Gaudiya Sangha. The mat was mostly deserted, and there was no prasad on hand. So Abhay and Vrindavan received the prominent guest, cooking for him, offering him prasad, and acquainting him with the activities of the Sangha. When Abhay wasn't busy managing the disorganized mat and working on Gaudiya Patrika and Sajjana Toshini, he spent his time preparing a Hindi translation of Chaitanya Charitamrita, although he was more accustomed to writing in English and Bengali. He reasoned that as long as he was preaching in Hindi-speaking areas, such a book would be important. Bhaktisaranga Goswami wrote that he wanted to print only 500 copies of Sajjana Toshini for the September issue, but Abhay wanted to print more. After making an agreement with the printer that the charges would be the same for 1,000 copies as for 500, he wrote Bhaktisaranga Maharaj informing him of the good news. Bhai also told him that he had recently secured a donation of printing paper and that he had arranged for a 1/4 reduction in the postal charges from a letter. So why, for the matter of saving some papers, we shall not print the full number. In my opinion, we should print more than 1,000 copies every month and distribute them in large scale. The Bhaktisaranga replied through a brief postcard that they should print no more than 500. Abhay continued his attempts to improve Sajjana Toshini. For him, it was not a perfunctory duty, but absorbing preaching. In a letter to Bhaktisaranga Goswami, he expressed anxiety over waiting for him to send articles for the next issue. Funds were scarce, so scarce that Abhay had no decent dhoti, and yet he continued to envision a glorious future for Sajjana Toshini. From a letter, I wish to see this paper just to the standard of Illustrated Weekly, with numerous pictures in order to make it a very popular literature. And for this, I wish to move myself to secure subscribers as well as advertisers. I wish to visit good businessmen, insurance companies, and government officers in this connection. But I have no proper dress at all. I want 2 sets of good dresses in order to take up this responsibility, and I shall be glad to have your decision on this matter. It is my heart's desire that this paper is improved to the highest elevation. Abhay also requested that Bhaktisaranga Goswami help him publish his Hindi Chaitanya Charitamrita. Some non-Bengali gentlemen were demanding the book and had assured Abhay that they would pay 25 rupees per volume. Abhay requested a loan of 600 rupees under any arrangement suitable to Bhaktisaranga Goswami for publishing the first part of his work. If this part is sold out, Abhay wrote, the other parts will automatically come out. It means if you sell the first one, they'll pay. You sell that money from that, then that'll then pay for the next ones to be done. Right? But just as life in the Gaudiya Sangha and work on the Sajjana Toshini under Bhaktisaranga Goswami's hand produced strain for Abhay, Abhay's ambitions for increased circulation and his strong editorial opinions also created strain for Bhaktisaranga Goswami. In response to Abhay's letter, Bhaktisaranga Goswami's secretary, Ramananda, wrote a letter full of flowery praises of Bhaktivedanta Prabhu, but with the intent of dismissing him from his position with the Gaudiya Sangha. So from the letter, with innumerable humble obeisances at the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, Srimat Bhaktivedanta Prabhu. We received your letter written to Sri Guru Maharaj on 5/10/55. Your project is very lofty, and you are a well-wisher of our society. We got to know that also. Since the last 2 months, in spite of so many difficulties, the difficulties of prasadam and misunderstanding of the devotees are there. And in spite of various other difficulties, the kind of enthusiasm that you have shown that is possible only for an elevated Vaishnav like yourself. You are a favorite Vaishnav of Srila Prabhupada and a friend of all the special associates of Srila Prabhupada. Most of the devotees in Gaudiya Sangha Ashram in Delhi are new and less respectful. They cannot give proper respect to an elevated personality like yourself, especially the lofty speculations that you have. Our society at the present circumstances has a little ideas. We hope that with all your qualities, very soon you will become settled independently and fulfilling the desires of Srila Prabhupada, start preaching very widely. We are suspecting that it won't be possible for an able and respectable Vaishnav like yourself to stay there long adjusting with the illiterate and less educated devotees of the Gaudiya Sangha in Delhi. Moreover, you are the head of the editorial board of Srimad Keshava Maharaj's Vedanta Samiti, Gaudiya Patrika, and Bhagavat Patrika. So if you spend much time in our ashram, then he might become annoyed, right? They were already there, so they didn't worry that he'd become annoyed that they're taking him away, but, you know, now they're worried, oh, he may be annoyed. With the many devotees, he is setting out to circumambulate the land of Braja, and we are sure that he will need your assistance in this parikram. So you consider all the pros and cons, and if you do not neglect the duty as a leader of his organization, we will be pleased. Right? If you do not, you know, in other words, if you don't neglect the work of taking care of his ashram, that will make us happy. You understand how I'm saying it? And they're not saying, you know, we can't take care of you anymore. We don't have any service for you. That service over there is important. You're not being there will disturb Keshava Maharaj, and we would be very pleased if you didn't neglect those duties. Right? Like that. Some articles have been sent for the October issue Sajjana Toshini, and some more might be sent. We will be very much obliged if you would instruct Keshavananda Prabhu to publish the October issue. We hope that Sri Guru Maharaj will be able to personally publish the November and December issues. We wish to transfer it to Calcutta from the month of January. Sri Guru Maharaj has become old, and most of the time he has to depend on us. We are very happy to know that you are trying very hard to publish the Chaitanya Charitamrita in Hindi. But at the present circumstances, it won't be possible for us to invest 600 rupees from our fund in order to print that, because Sri Guru Maharaj has taken up many projects in different directions now, and he has to spend a lot of money, so he can't take the responsibility of printing that book. Keshavananda wrote that your clothes are getting torn, so buy a pair of clothes from the fund of the temple, and if the devotees commit offenses at your lotus feet due to their short-sightedness, please forgive them. Signed, the servant of the servant of the Vaishnav, Sri Ramananda Das. It was not a fact that Abai was being called for leadership in Keshava Maharaj's parikram, although it was a good excuse for Ramananda suggesting that Abai leave the Gaudiya Sangha. So after living as a dutiful member in the ashrams of Keshava Maharaj and Bhakti Sranga Maharaj, Abai was again on his own. Without income or institutional shelter, Abai began staying in various homes in Delhi, living from week to week wherever he received an invitation. In terms of food, clothing, and shelter, these were the most difficult times he had ever gone through. Since his childhood, there had always been plenty of food and good clothes and no question of where he would live. Remember that Prabhupada's father would every year, you know, arrange that a Kashmir shawl be brought from, you know, like that. So, you know, they lived well. They were simple, but it didn't mean that the necessities weren't nice. You know, that's an important thing, as we see, is that in human life, then, you know, your clothes, your food, your staying arrangements and all that, then those are nice and comfortable. Then if there's anything more above that, then you can do other things. But these things are always taken care of first, right? Because if you, you know, dress properly, eat properly, stay properly, then you'll be healthy, you'll be comfortable, and things will work well, right? Other things are not as important, right? Does that make sense? Yes? No?
Yes.
Okay, it means you have a nice iPod, but you have no food. That doesn't work very well. Better to have nice food and no iPod. Yes? No? Very good. Yes? Okay. He had been the pet child of his father and had received special guidance and affection from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. But now Abhay sometimes felt alone. Homeless, he moved around Delhi from one temporary residence to another. A Vishnu temple, a room at the Kanpur College of Commerce. But he was seeking donors, preaching from Bhagavad Gita, writing. His goal wasn't to find a permanent residence, but to print his transcendental literature and to establish or join forces with a pure, powerful movement for spreading Krishna consciousness. Abhay made a list of several books he wanted to publish. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Hindi, 2,000 pages. Gita Upanishad, English, 1,200 pages. Science of Devotion, English, 300 pages. Lord Chaitanya's Samkirtan Movement, English, 300 pages. Message of Godhead, English, 300 pages. Bhagavanair Katha, Bengali, 50 pages. But to print, he needed donors. He called on wealthy men in their office and homes, presenting his manuscripts and explaining his mission. He had a list of donors, but few responded. And when he did receive a donation, it was usually only 5 or 10 rupees. Occasionally, he would receive a letter of appreciation or endorsement. One appreciation came from Naren Das Rai Bahadur, a retired executive engineer and secretary of the Birla Mandir Trust, who had attended a public meeting Abhay had held in the presence of a popular guru, Mother Anandamoyi. Impressed by Abhay's reading from his Hindi Chaitanya Charitamrita, Mother Anandamayi had donated 50 rupees and suggested that Abhay also visit a well-known sadhu, Sri Hari Baba, who was lying ill in the hospital. Abhay, accompanied by Naren Das, then visited Hari Baba, who had claimed that Abhay's reading put him into ecstasy. Meanwhile, Naren Das was becoming inclined to help, and in December he wrote a letter suggesting that everyone, quote, extend their helping hand for the successful publication of Sri A.C. Bhaktivedanta's various writings in Hindi, English, and Bengali. I wish him all success in his noble attempt. Abhay would show this and other such letters to prospective supporters. In Delhi, it was not difficult to see government ministers, judges, lawyers, business executives, religious heads. There was always someone willing to hear seriously and occasionally to offer support. Thus Abhay, with the two Dodis and Kurtas the Gaudiya Sangha had supplied him, with his ability to preach and convince, but with little support and no fixed residence, continued his preaching undaunted. So you can see here, Prabhupada knows that you're going out to preach and all that, you should dress nicely, right? So you should look good, you know, so being dressed as a gentleman properly and all that, that's important for the preaching, like that. So in other words, that means it's not a question of fashion, it's a question of what is considered respectable. Does that make sense? Because fashion can also be not necessarily respectable, right? It can be all kinds of weird things. So, therefore, the idea is that what looks people are comfortable with that is considered, you know, cultured or something like that, whatever it would be. So here, you know, cloth is clean, it's worn nicely, all these things. That's why that's important. You practice how to wear your cloth, how to wear it nicely, how to keep it clean. Right? What do you think? Keeping clothes clean is good, not so good? You're not sure. If your mother does it, it's good, right? No. It's not good. Why isn't it good if your mother keeps your clothes clean? It's good. Okay. But what about you keeping your clothes clean? Also good. Better. Ah, he says better. What is your opinion? Which is better? You keep them clean or your mother keeps them clean? So not sure. You, okay. Figured out that's the more politically correct answer. Okay, very good. Very good. Okay, so you understand? So that's why you learn. Keep your locker nice, keep your clothes nice, keep them clean, you know, fold them up properly, right? Dress properly, all these things, because this is how then people will respect that, you know, you have something to say. If you're clean, you're dressed nicely, you behave nicely, then they'll think this person may have something to say. But if you look like a slob, you know, behave badly, then who wants to, you know, how you say, hear what you have to say? Right? Does that make sense? Maybe they'll ask if you want to play marbles, but other than that, then there's a good chance they're not going to want to hear anything from you. It's least philosophical. Yes? Writing and trying to publish was only half his effort. The other half was taking part in efforts for a world movement like the League of Devotees. Through Narain Das, Abai inquired whether there might be a way he could do his work under the auspices of the Birla Mandir, one of the largest and richest temples in Delhi. Abai proposed that he be put in charge of propaganda in the English language, both within India and abroad. Since Narain Das considered himself a follower of Sanatan Dharma, Abai wrote to him explaining how the teachings of Bhagavad Gita set forth the real Sanatan Dharma. Abai had many ideas about how Sanatan Dharma was the eternal religion for all living beings and could be expanded and practically applied if Narain Das would but help him. From a letter, I want to train up 40 educated youths to learn this science of transcendental knowledge and just prepare them for going to foreign countries for missionary work. To start immediately an English paper or to revive my paper Back to Godhead in the style of Illustrated Weekly of India. To organize a Sankirtan party which shall not be only of good singers and musicians but also to be used to practice sadhana or self-realization. Abai promised that as soon as he had done some groundwork, he, along with men and equipment, could start for foreign countries to propagate this missionary work. But he admitted also that he was externally in dire straits. Quote, kindly do arrange for the above immediately and give me a proper place to live. I must remove from this temporary quarter by Monday next latest. The directors of the Birla Mandir did not take Abai up on his offer, but he thought of another way of engaging him. He would hold a public meeting at the Birla Mandir to help generate interest in the League of Devotees. He approached Sri R.N. Agarwal, president of the Delhi Municipal Committee, who, after hearing the names of several respected people who would be attending, agreed to preside over the meeting. Abai set the date for December 22nd. And printed 500 announcements and 200 invitation cards. Striking a cosmopolitan note, he stated in his announcement, by the grace of the Almighty, Delhi is becoming the center of cultural association of the world. The leaders of both Russia and India had recently pointed to the need for cultural contact between all nations, but the highest culture, Abai suggested, was scientific spiritual knowledge. Therefore, the best cultural resources in the world existed in India. And these resources, Abai stressed, should not be left to the unorganized sadhus and sannyasis, but should be taken up by important members of the society in an organized way. So Prabhupada's trying, you know, any angle that's there, if they want to support, if not, then if they'll lend their place for giving meetings and all that. So he's trying in all these ways, but unfortunately people can't necessarily identify really between what's really bona fide and what's, you know, just nice. So they have all these sadhus, so unfortunately they'll think Prabhupada's just another sadhu, another nice person. And then in this, then,
they won't understand what he's trying to do, this whole international, you know, preaching mission. So they don't see the importance of it, you know, because otherwise they just think another sadhu trying to set something up. But here they can't see that, yes, it's another sadhu, but this sadhu is bona fide coming in the parampara. Right? So they're missing that point. The December 22nd Hindustan Times listed the meeting of the League of Devotees in the Today's Engagements column, along with announcements for meetings of the Rotary Club, the Tagore Society, the Indian Council of World Affairs, Bharat Scouts, and the Indian Pharmaceutical Congress. The League's meeting began with a kirtan led by Professor H. Chand and then A.C. Bhaktivedanta, founder and secretary of the League of Devotees, explained his movement's objectives. Then Narain Das spoke and afterwards read a number of proposed resolutions from the founder secretary, attesting that the persons present supported the League of Devotees and that they recommended that the central government of India also support it as a movement for world peace based on Gandhian principles. After adoption of the resolutions, the meeting closed with another kirtan and prasad. Gandhian principles. So we have our, what do you call it? Self-sufficiency project. That can be a Gandhian project or something. Okay. Abai, convinced that if his well-wishers and fellow humanitarians would support him on a grand scale, he could create a movement for world peace based on the principles of devotional service to Lord Krishna. But his role was simply to present Krishna consciousness to whomever he could. The results were up to Krishna. Abai was aware that the good intentions of most of the participants in his Birla Mandir meeting would not go past that one meeting, but he wasn't discouraged. Through all his tireless evangelism, he maintained a philosophic jollity. What's a jollity? Yes, he was always happy. Right? So a jollity. I like that. In one sense, he was already fully satisfied. He was happy to be working on behalf of a spiritual master. Although he was changing addresses so fast that his mail could hardly catch up to him, he wrote a newspaper ad for a home study course. Educational. It's from the ad. Study the spiritual secret of Bhagavad Gita at home by correspondence and be a strong man. Full course fee, rupees 50 only. The instruction is imparted not in the ordinary imaginative way of qualified interpretations, but in the parampara system of preceptoral succession. All questions are properly solved. Apply A.C. Bhaktivedanta. Students of all communities and all nationalities are welcome. He had not published Back to Godhead in 4 years since 1952, but he had decided to revive it. Back to Godhead was a mission worthy of his full attention, and it took all his efforts to collect the funds, compose the articles, see to the printing, and then distribute 1,000 copies. The money he would raise by obtaining interviews and soliciting donations. One donor and friend was Justice Bipin Chandra Misra, a Supreme Court judge in New Delhi. Justice Misra. He used to come to me once a month. I gave him donations for his paper. It was only a 4-page magazine, but it showed his study of the subject and his earnestness and his devotion to Lord Krishna. He appeared to be a very simple man and modest, and it was pleasant to talk to him. He had a smiling demure. What's a smiling demure? Is that kind of like those long, furry, kind of like pleasant rats with feet and tail, long, bushy tail?
Was happy and smiling?
Happy and smiling. Okay. He was happy and smiling, not that his demure was happy and smiling. So then what's the demure?
I think the demure is like attitude.
Yeah, kind of the mood, the presentation. Well, you can, you know, you can see his face and his mood and it, the just all that together. What he looked like, the attitude that was projected, the mood that was projected, all that together. Okay, so it's not a like a lemur or something like that. His smiling lemur was very like that. Okay. The main thing was his humility. He could talk with affection and confidence. And he knew we were discussing things near to God. So every talk with him would sublimate us. It was a rather important... I was a rather important personality at that time in religious affairs. But he would not be expected to make any... But he would not be expected to make any contribution to the main religious life of Delhi at that time because of the language difficulty, because his aim was to reach the English-educated persons, not the Hindi ones, and also because his means and his popularity were not at all established. The magazine did not have a wide appeal amongst these people. Other religious leaders were all well established. The only thing that impressed one and was worth noticing at that time was the simplicity of his abiding faith in God's name and his mission. Writing articles was no problem. By the grace of his spiritual master, he was neither short of ideas nor unable to set them down. What does that mean, set down an idea? Put it in the corner somewhere or something. He could put them down in the corner very nicely. They weren't crooked or anything. And found a nice place to put them on top of, so they weren't just on the floor in the corner with the dust.
Means he found a way to communicate it properly and write it down?
Yes. Means when you could set down, means you could actually write it on the paper. You wouldn't get stuck what to write, what to say, anything like that. So then that's setting down. Right? And he had no problem for ideas. He had the ideas, he knew what he wanted to say, so then he could write. Yes? Yeah. Translating and commenting on the Vaishnava scriptures, his pen flowed freely. He was inspired by the miracle of the press, the Brihad Madanga. The work of writing his message down and printing it 1,000 times with the awareness and urgency of speaking directly to everyone, not just people in Delhi or India, but everyone. But Abai put an ecstatic meditation. Oh, wait a minute. Okay. The work of writing his message down and printing it 1,000 times with the awareness and urgency of speaking directly to everyone, not just people in Delhi or India, but everyone, that put Abai into an ecstatic meditation. He would contemplate how copies of Back to Godhead could reach the thoughtful people who might read them gratefully. Right? So it's here is that he writes the article once, then he can give it to a printer, and then they'll print 1,000 copies. Because previously, you get your palm leaves, you write the book once, and then you have one copy, right? You want a second copy, you sit down and write another one, right? So here is, you can write once, and then end up with 1,000 copies. So he was thinking, this is very good. And not only that, is that in this way, he could speak to everyone, right? Because the writing has meaning. Right? It's actually there. The people who don't know him, who haven't heard, they can hear this and get transcendental benefit. So that's very important because through hearing, you're associating. So whether the hearing is in the spoken word or the written word, you're associating with the writer. Right? Like we read Nectar Devotion, we're associating with Srila Rupa Goswami. Right? We're reading Bhagavad Gita, we're associating with Krishna and Arjuna. Right? Like that, because parampara, then there's nothing in between, right? Just like a glass, a window, you look out the window, and you can see everything outside, right? It's direct. Does that make sense? So it's like that, is that reading the books of the Acharyas coming in the Parampara, you're directly associating with them because no one in between is creating an obstacle. Right? Does that make sense? Nor was maintenance a problem. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Sukadev Goswami, who had declared that a devotee's problem was not food, clothing, or shelter. If one had no bed, he could always lie on the ground and use his arms for a pillow. For clothes, he could always find some rejected garments in the street. For food, he could live on fruits from the trees. And for lodging, he could stay in the mountain caves. Nature supplies all necessities. A transcendentalist should not flatter materialists to maintain himself. Of course, Abai wasn't living in the mountains or jungle, but in the city of New Delhi. Yet he had virtually adopted the renounced mode Sukadev had suggested, not to punish his body or prove himself pure and uncompromising, but because he had to live in poverty if he wanted to regularly produce back to Godhead. Right? You could go out into the forest, everything would be taken care of, but then there's no preaching. So therefore he's in Delhi, which, I mean, here he said it's not the, what did he say? It's not the forest. Mountains or jungle, but in the city of New Delhi. So you could probably call that a jungle, but, you know, it doesn't have the trees and all that. So he wasn't living such an austere lifestyle to prove how he was so austere and everything like that. But he was doing it simply so he could be in the city so he could preach. Right? That was his idea. For Abai, it was a great labor of love, and purchasing paper for printing became a priority even before eating. Neglecting his personal needs for preaching was a manifestation of his faith in Krishna, of which Abai suffered no scarcity. Right? What didn't he have a scarcity of? No idea. Anyone has an idea? Faith in Krishna. Krishna consciousness, yes. Yes. Okay. He had full faith that if he served Krishna, he would be provided for. To work alone was not an insurmountable problem. It was pleasant and simple. It was better than having to manage the neophyte inmates of the Gaudiya Sangha. The ecstasy of working hard to serve a spiritual master was not a problem. The problem was the condition of the world, right? So doing the service wasn't the problem. The problem is the world itself being, you know, not being God conscious. That's the problem, because people don't understand, don't see the importance. They themselves are in a disturbed condition and disturbing others. So that's actually the problem. But otherwise it's not. Yes? No? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premadanta ki.